All right. Hello and welcome to the GGG podcast. I'm Paul and I am joined once again by the illustrious Phil. He's illustrious this week. We're bringing illustrious back. And
yeah. Let's make illustrious again.
Illustrious again. Okay. We got a great show for you. Some interesting stories going around the interwebs. We're going to break it down and talk about it. But first, if you have not liked or subscribed to our podcast, please go ahead and give us a like or subscribe over on YouTube or Spotify or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or wherever you are. Give us those likes. So without further ado, Phil, how are you doing? What have you been playing this week? What's been going on?
I have been good and busy, which is good, but also I haven't had as much time to dive into Final Fantasy VII as I'd like, which is the game I've been playing, and we will talk about it more at the end of the show. Oh. But I'm also experiencing a new thing where I'm feeling FOMO about not getting to play Helldivers as much as I want.
Yeah, I'm like, the social media won't let you forget.
It won't let me forget. I feel guilty that I'm not out here killing robots because somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, the war effort needs you. So
they're going to get to Super Earth, and then what happens? Do they just delete the game? I don't know.
You made me think about that for a second. Damn.
Very depressing thought. Paul, what have you been playing? What have you been up to, my friend?
Lots of, still a lot of Helldivers. I've been playing a slightly less Helldivers because I'm trying to gauge myself, trying not to get sick of it. But I've been having a great time with that, doing the orders with friends. Been playing some more Deep Rock Survivor, which has been really fun. Just a great way to kill like 20 minutes or if you ever have like an awkward amount of time. So I've been playing that as well. And then I have a confession to make, Phil. And it's pretty bad. So
Starfield again?
No, not that bad. Worse. I, as many of you know, last week I talked about how I tried the 8-hour trial for Skull and Bones.
Oh no.
And this Sunday I was playing it some more and I was getting close to the end of my 8 hours and I was like, I think I'm gonna buy this game. And I bought Skull and Bones. God forgive me.
Was it on sale?
Nope.
Paul.
So here's the thing is that I will never say that this is a great or even like a good game, but I have found like a lot of fun with just the chill vibe that it is, with like sailing on the seas. Like on Sunday, when I was playing the trial, like Caitlin was sitting on the couch. I'm playing it on my PS5. My girlfriend's sitting on the couch and I'm able to have a full conversation with her while playing the game. And I know that that's not necessarily like a goal when you're playing a video game, but it was just that kind of thing of like, this is a game that doesn't require 100% of my attention. Cause when I'm playing Helldivers, I'm like, I can't talk right now. I cannot do it. Like it can give you none of my focus. So I bought it.
So you're saying it's a good couple game for like,
it's a game.
One of you is playing.
Game that if you're in voice chat, or you can have a conversation while playing this game that isn't about the game. I'm enjoying the vehicle combat. Everything that's not on the ship is awful. But I do believe that the ship combat, I believe that there's something there. It is, yes, it's pulled from Black Flag, but I'm having fun. I'm having fun with it. So
I think there's something to be said for they're doing a thing that nobody else is doing. Like, kudos to them for finding a game that like literally doesn't exist in the form that it is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know what I mean? That's pretty cool.
So I know it's an unpopular opinion. I'm going to put out, I drafted a video today. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put out a video explaining not why it's a good game, but why I think it's not that bad. So I'm going to be putting that out on our YouTube channel.
Okay. So I know that this may be a loaded question. I know that you bought it at full price.
I did.
They just said, how much do you think is the price point that like your average person should pull the trigger on this game?
So my biggest problem with the game is I think it's overpriced. I think that this is a $40 game with a battle pass at $10. That's what it should be, because that's the content that they're giving you, especially with like having only ship combat. It's a $40 game. And so the fact that it's $70 is ridiculous. And like, I'm sorry, it costs you a lot of money, Ubisoft. Maybe you shouldn't have 20,000 studios across the planet all working on it. Because I can't tell. So I think that's the biggest problem. I think if this was a $40 release, people would buy it. And it would be a good game if it was a $40 release. But asking that AAA price point,
let's get that dialogue going. More, we need to normalize games coming out at different price points.
Yeah.
Because not every game is a $60, $70 game. Not every game is a $50 game.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Especially like if you're, you know, we talk about games as a service every week now, and I hate it, but that's where the gaming industry is. And it's like, if you're a game as a service, do not launch at $70. That's not how it works. Like, you're trying to make money over time, and you're getting greedy by trying to make your money up front. And it's like, you're not God of War. You're not, like, sorry. Anyway. All right. That's my confession. I got heated.
Okay.
You got to calm down. But I can't calm down because the major release this week is WWE 2K24.
I don't know if John Cena's in this one. I feel like he's mostly an actor now.
You know, they put out his interview for MK this week. So, like,
oh, that's right.
I feel like they were like, oh, we should, WWE's coming out. We should put out the John Cena interview.
So that's pretty cool. I haven't played one of these since the N64. So I'm just happy to see that they're still going.
Yeah. I mean, this is a cult, like, sports classic. I feel like there's a lot of people who play WWE 2K. Like, really. So I'm not really a wrestling fan. I have some friends who are into wrestling and into, you know, that
that culture. Hey, I think it's a very cool thing. It's theater for sports bros. Like, that's really I'm happy that space is occupied by people. Because it is some of the most entertaining, like, live weekly theater that you can see.
Yeah, absolutely. So, fans of WWE, I'm glad you're getting this game. I hope it's good. I haven't seen any early reviews for it. But aside from that, that's pretty much been the only big release this week, unless I'm forgetting something. Or there's some little teeny tiny indie game that we want to talk about. Probably not, though.
Probably not. I mean, March is cooling for a minute while we let all that January, February steam rise off of our wallet, because hot dang, so many big games last month.
Indeed.
I guess let's get on down to the news corner of our show.
Okay, yeah, get on down to that corner of the news.
Come on down.
All right, what's going on in the news, Phil?
Well, I mean, this is near and dear to both of our hearts, but Helldivers 2 has been having, again, this game is, viral marketing is brilliant, but XO45s are heading into the game soon. They said that they were releasing XO45s, which is mech suits, right after launch, or soon after launch, and a lot of people have been posting videos of, like, someone dropping into their team and having a mech suit. And then, like, ordering one for the rest of the crew. So it seems like they're kind of rolling it out maybe amongst testers or something. But I like the idea that it's kind of, like, started out as this rumor of, like, oh, wait, have you seen mechs? Like, we're all sort of confused about it. Although I'm sure they will fully announce when that releases, because why not capitalize on this game's unyielding popularity?
So an interesting tidbit. So they have said that there was going to be monthly updates. And their next scheduled monthly update, I believe, is March 14th. And so that would fall in line because now Arrowhead is actually like taking ownership of the mechs and they are putting it out and publicizing the mechs as opposed to like leaked footage or tester footage or people hacking into the game on it, you know,
and getting those.
Yeah. So presumably this will be coming March 14th. I'm more curious about what the enemy response is going to be if we're going to see new enemy types, and that's the reason that they're giving us mechs, because if they're just giving us mechs to just kill the same enemies, I mean, I'm down for that, but yeah, it can't be it. Joel's got to be up to something else.
I think we're going to have a minute where things are great. We have mechs, we're just decimating, and then a new threat is going to arise, probably from the machines, but also possibly from the Terminators, a new type of bug or a new type of robot enemy.
Or that's the Illuminate.
Or the Illuminate. I mean, here's my thing. I think they're saving them for like a little bit later down the line.
I agree. Yeah, that makes sense. So,
but I think a new enemy, like a just an enemy mob type that is good against machines will be pretty cool. Because I've also seen footage that a tank type vehicle is also on its way to Helldivers. And again, it's something I definitely, when I've been running around the map, have said to my fellow soldiers, oh yeah, I want one of those. Like, I wish we had a car. But yeah, I think there's got to be a response to it, because at the game's like current state, it feels like either a mech or a tank would be kind of OP.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. What's the highest difficulty you've done, Phil?
Oh, well, I mean, I think I got up to hard, but again, my time has been so limited.
Of course. Yes.
But yeah. How do you feel about this? You excited? You ready?
Oh, I'm super excited. I'm stoked for more things to, you know, be added to the game. You know, I'm excited that they've committed to like kind of a monthly update. And so I'm ready for it. I'm excited. I love this game. I love Helldivers. I love the community. And, you know, it's really, with the Galactic War, it's really established kind of this level of like nerdy D&D role playing, that, people are really latching onto, and myself included. Like when I play with my friends, we call each other by like our naval signs or,
Cool.
So like, my T1, handle starts P4. With a W, so yeah, I'm Whiskey. You know, I got a friend who starts with a Z, so he's Zulu. Another guy, A, Alpha, B, Bravo, O, Oscar, you know, like,
whoa.
Yeah, so that's what we call each other when we're playing the game. So
very good.
Yeah. All right.
Man, that's great. I little side note.
Yes.
I saw a video online of someone pointing out that like the illegal broadcast mission, like when you look at it, it's talking about how it's just saying stuff against Super Earth talk, and then you see like all of the scientists who've died there, it looks like they were shot and not like ripped to shreds by bugs or something. It was cute, you know, someone noticing a small detail in the game that we're all pretty aware of. But then all the comments were like, hey, what an interesting perspective. I'm just gonna have some Patriot officers come by and have a talk with you, okay? It's like everybody was calling it propaganda. It was excellent. We've all bought in. We're all role-playing.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to find out what the big secret is, if there is a big secret to be revealed. So
the secret is that we're heroes, is what it is.
You're goddamn right. All right, so moving on. Respawn Entertainment recently had a number of layoffs, but we did get some positive news coming out of the studio, and that is that they are working on a new game in the Titanfall universe, but they specifically said it's not Titanfall 3.
Interesting.
Which is weird, because when I think of the Titanfall universe, I think of Titans. So are there Titans falling in the game? Like, how is it not Titanfall 3 other than Titanfall subtitle?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know
what. I mean, that it would be. Okay, there's a couple of things that I feel like it could be. Technically, Apex Legends is kind of a Titanfall universe game. And technically, the pieces of a Titan are in the game on one of the characters. I can't remember her name right now, but she used to be my main She like constructed pieces of her father's Titan that was like destroyed in battle to give herself like a wingsuit.
Okay.
A lot of flavor in that game. And I feel like Respawn, because they've been so focused on Apex Legends, they have not been able to really work on Titanfall 3, which after Titanfall 2, we were all hungry for. Mm-hmm.
They had an update for Titanfall 2 like last fall, right? Am I correct in thinking that? Like, and that's an old game now. Like, that game's been out for a while. So, like, on most, that's one of those games, like, when I'm going through a sale on Steam or PlayStation or Xbox or whatever, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's Titanfall 2 for $4.99.
With everything in it.
With everything. It's the ultimate edition.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about this because I think Apex Legends is great. I played my share of it. But no game has really gotten mobility as well, in my opinion, as Titanfall did.
Yeah.
Playing as a Titan was a lot of fun, and like, I liked the going back and forth of like being really tanky versus the incredible, like, you run, you jump off a wall, you wall run, you zip line, you like, and taking down a Titan as a dude. Like, the game just had a lot of really unique things going for it. So hope whatever it is Titanfall 3 in spirit.
Yeah. Ooh, I hope so as well. Like, I really like Titanfall. I like, you know, 2 is really, really great. But I was just a fan of, like, because I know that they're the original creators of, like, Call of Duty. And, like, when those creators were working on Call of Duty, that's when I used to play Call of Duty. And so, like, a lot of their mechanics and things felt very familiar to me. And then, like you said, the movement was just so good. You could just fly around a map. Having that, like, you know, parkour, kind of that mirror's edge, but I have rocket packs so I can slide on a wall, like Prince of Persia. It was just... very, very cool. I would love Titanfall 3. I'm sad that it's not Titanfall 3, but I hope it's... whatever this game is, I hope it's closer to Titanfall than it is to Apex Legends, even though it sounds like... And I did not know this, that they are in the same universe. So,
yeah.
Loosely excited for that.
I'll take a milieu of excitement just... over the idea of robots falling from the sky.
Sure.
Speaking of which, how about a world without robots or AI or anything like that?
How about a world made of sand?
You mean Nevada?
Yeah. Nevada Awakening. Dune Awakening got a new trailer this week. And it's a game that I had brought up, I think, maybe a month or two ago. It's a survival crafting game. They're also calling it an MMO, which has got my red flag ears like up a little bit, because, you know, that's kind of what kind of my whole problem with Skull and Bones is, it's trying to be an MMO. I'd rather not. I'd rather just make a good game.
Hey, guys, historically, how have MMOs worked out? There's World of Warcraft, and that's about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Matrix MMO? Remember the Matrix Online, guys?
I think EVE Online's still going. Guild Wars 2. ESO.
Guild Wars 2 relies on weebs extensively, though. So
well, we'll get into the weebs later. For our main topic, we'll be discussing weebs. And what is a weeb? Find out later. So anyway, Dune Awakening, it's a survival craft. They're labeling it as an MMO. It had a really exciting trailer, obviously trying to get on that marketing train of Dune Part 2 coming out this week. I guess the only thing I'm a little wary of, and this is something that I'm going to refer to as kind of the Battlefield effect, is in the trailer, they show you like all the battles you can have and it just looks so organized. And that's kind of how they what they do with the Battlefield trailer. So it's like, look at this incredibly organized battle of what possibly could happen when you play Battlefield. And it's like, when I play Battlefield, that crap never happens.
Yeah.
Nothing is organized. Everyone's running around with their, like, a chicken with a head cut off. And I feel like if you're making an MMO, I just don't know structurally what this game looks like, how this game plays. Like, is it like V Rising where there's a set map? I don't know. What do you think, Phil?
I would love the idea of a server type, like, based game. I was reading a little bit about some, like, statements about the game. And one of the things that the one of the designers said is that the concept is new players arrive in a certain area. And there, he's like, I hope that at some point there's veterans who show up and, like, recruit from that area with a ship and be like, hey, yeah, he's like, join my army with the promises of giving them water in the future and, like, making factions and armies that way. Again, sounds really cool, but I feel like it relies on a lot of people, like, really role-playing in a way that I don't know that people will.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Most MMOs just turn into people like pop. I remember the first time I played World of Warcraft, and I was like, this is going to be amazing. I'm, like, going to go into this world. I want to talk to people like my character, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, immediately I walked into a room, and there was 30 people standing, like, in a six-foot space with all their names over their heads, and they're all being like, level 45, axe, please. Like, just saying absolute nonsense that was completely game-breaking. And that's just what MMOs are. Unless you're playing in a roleplay server. But it's tough to expect that everyone's going to be on board with that. Which, I don't know. Even outside of that, the game looks really pretty. It looks like a fun crafter. It's a future setting, so it probably won't be as intensive of, like, all right, you got to chop. Well, you're not chopping down any trees. Well, that's a good thing.
God, I am, all right, not chopping down any trees for a while. Please, yeah. Please, gaming industry. I've had enough chopping of trees. I'm good.
The visuals look very impressive, though. And if it keeps up that, like, aesthetic and gets a bunch of people in the game, that might make me play it just to see, like, how it all looks. The oohah factor is high.
Yeah, the presentation looks very nice. Very impressed with that. But, yes, it's exactly... We're worried about the same thing. It's organization. Mm. It's, like... How much control are you going to give the players over this? And, like, in Helldivers, we talk about role-playing, and we talk about the Galactic War and everything, but the Galactic War is largely controlled by, you know, the company, and then we get to respond to it by meeting the objectives or not. We role-play, you know, into being soldiers. I'm Whiskey One, you know, like, but... I feel like with a survival crafting game, it's like you're giving players the ability to build a base in that basin over there. And it's like, once that spot's claimed, that spot's claimed. And, like, a problem that I had with playing V Rising on public servers is that, you know, the higher level people, the level 80s and everything, they would just come in and destroy you. They'd, like, take all your stuff or throw it away or just, you know, kill you repeatedly over and over again. And it's like, it's then the game becomes, it's like a race to the top. And then you just try to stay in power, which I guess is fun for people who are, like, really into PvP. But in those types of games, I feel like the winner is not the most skilled player. The winner is... who has 100 hours that they committed to this week to playing this game?
Not me. The most unemployed.
Yeah. Like, there is cause for concern there. And if that is how the game is, I hope that they let you do, like, private servers, because I think that's probably what I would want. And then maybe dip my toes into a public server. But they need to dole out more information. They're just not doing it. Also, I'm wondering about the lasso that Warner Brothers has over this game. So we'll see. We'll see how that
unfolds. You can buy the Worm Rider pack for $15.99, a very reasonable price.
Right.
However, that only allows you to ride one worm, and when that worm dies, you got to buy a new pack.
Yes, and that worm is very old, and he has many diseases, so he's going to die quickly. So,
dude, imagine if thumpers were something that you had to buy with real life money. Oh no! I said it out loud.
You said it out loud. It's going to happen.
No.
What did you do? What did you
David,
do?
David Zaslav, you listen to me right now. You don't do this.
No. All right. Let's press on. Speaking of, I guess I should have put the Call of Duty news next to the Respawn news. But we're getting some Call of Duty Warzone news. I figured I'd throw it in because this is like some slightly nerdy Call of Duty Warzone news. They are adding another licensing deal to their repertoire with Warhammer content. So now you can get Warhammer, like Space Marine armor for your COD soldier. I don't understand the crossover here other than like somebody in the office was like, did you guys hear that Henry Cavill is doing a Warhammer show? Like... And then be like, oh my God, Henry Cavill's a bro. Like,
he plays games. Let's try to get him to play our game.
Like, I don't get it.
The image for the like the crossover has different armors, but it's got one dude with a mohawk and skin tight Oakleys on. Like, you know, those wraparound glasses that are almost built into his head. Mm-hmm. It looks like he's about to film a video from the front seat of his car complaining about how Dr. Seuss is too woke or whatever. That said, cool? Like, unless it's gameplay, I really don't care about these types of crossovers, which is like... Maybe if I was a bigger fan, I would want to buy one of these skins.
I guess for me, like, I think there is a difference between Fortnite and Call of Duty Warzone. And the difference with Fortnite is, like, there's events in Fortnite where there's, like, special quests or missions that if they're doing the Peter Griffin crossover, yeah, that's silly as hell. But at least there's some sort of like level design or something that goes into it. It's not just a skin. And so I just think this is lazy. Like, I don't know. I don't follow Dr. Disrespect, but you know, he always like randomly pops up in my feed because I follow a lot of gaming stuff. And just he's getting sick of Call of Duty Warzone. Everybody's getting sick of Call of Duty Warzone. They all refuse to play anything else. But they just complain about the game the whole time. And it's like, well, you're going to keep buying the content that they put out. And I don't see the crossover here with Warhammer nerds and Call of Duty. Maybe it's a niche that I just don't know that it exists, but whatever.
Well, I guess there are some game modes coming along, like in the update for that are more related to.
Yeah, there are game modes.
So that's something. But again, Call of Duty is sort of such the game that it is that it feels like, what can we really add here? I don't know.
Well, so what I'm reading off of GameSpot is that there's going to be a big zombies update. Like, what does that have to do with the Warhammer skins? It's like we talked about, like, Destiny throwing in the Mass Effect skins, which is like, it's cool, but like, what do you, why?
You know, I wonder with a lot of these games if they're like, this is kind of a walk. Stay with me here. Okay. When Magic the Gathering, like 2 years ago, released a Baldur's Gate set that had characters from the game, I believe that is when Baldur's Gate was initially supposed to launch. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, this is a great opportunity for a tie-over. Let's get it done. And I think... then Baldur's Gate got delayed, but those cards still came out because the timeline for this big company that is Hasbro Magic the Gathering was like, we can't move that set later, so it's just going to come out when it comes out. I think maybe something's happening here. Maybe we're supposed to get some sort of either thing about the show or the upcoming third-person game around now, and that got delayed.
Well, That's a very valid point. I do know that like Space Marine was supposed to be released last year, but I don't know. From the moment they said that, I was like, that's never going to happen. Like, yeah. I know the industry too well. So it's supposed to be releasing it in September, and I think that's a reasonable time frame for it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess what I'm not mad at COD specifically. I guess I'm more mad at just licensing for licensing's sake, trying to get a quick buck. And to me, it's... I also, like, I'm not a full Warhammer nerd, but just to stand up for some of my friends who are bigger Warhammer nerds, the idea that you, as a normal person, would put on, oh, this is, like, kind of Space Marine armor. It's like the whole thing about Space Marine armor is that it's humongous, that you're this walking Hulk of a person. You're not a normal trooper. And seeing that the picture of, you know... what'd you say?
A dude in wraparound Oakleys.
Yeah,
our skin tight Oakleys.
Captain Oakley over here, and like I'm a Space Marine. It's like, no, you're not. You're cosplaying at a medium sized city's Comic Con. So anyway, moving on. Sassy today. Okay,
that's good. Yeah,
take it. Go.
No, you're good. You're good. Keep going. Go. Okay. I believe in
Next
you.
Next bit of news. Baldur's Gate 3. Because we can't not talk about it every single week, it keeps wiggling its way into the news. So it's getting a physical release on Xbox. How fun. Except it's four discs. It's four discs.
Wait.
Why?
It's cool that we are back in 1996, where there's a new Final Fantasy VII game, and this Baldur's Gate 3 is coming out on four discs.
Here's the thing. It's like, I do need to check myself, because I'm like, you know, you live in the United States, you have access to good internet, you can buy pretty much all of your games digitally, and you don't have to wait very long for them to download. Like, even Baldur's Gate, a huge game, is probably only going to take me like 2 to 3 hours to download, maybe. And and even people with not fast internet, you can be like, well, I'll download it overnight while I sleep.
Yeah.
But I do understand that there's people whose internet just is awful. You live in certain parts of the world or even parts of the country where the internet's bad, and you kind of rely on physical releases. I get that. But, like, I feel like the next time Baldur's Gate has an update, you have to update the game anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah. You need an internet connection to do that.
That's a good point. Okay, yeah, here's the argument I can make. The game being on four discs means that it is not just what some games physically are, which is you pop it in and then it just is a license to download the game. It's like basically a key to play the game. Yep. So that means that the game is actually on those discs, which is cool for a preservationist. Like, from that point of view, it is kind of weird to not own things to the degree that we do not own things.
Yes, very true.
So I'm happy for people who are, like, really about having their game libraries, like, fully having everything on there. I do think it's a bit silly, but I think that this game kind of deserves people, like, there's a lot of people who are going to want to collect this one, you know?
Yeah. I guess, like, are we overdue for a new Blu-ray? Like, because it's starting to feel like it. And I understand that most things are digital, and that's probably why a new version of Blu-ray hasn't come out yet. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the Xbox Series X has a Blu-ray player in it, you know? Like, I might be wrong about this, because this is kind of old information. But from when Blu-rays came out, I believe that a Blu-ray could put like 60 gigabytes on a single disc.
Yeah.
Which was crazy back in the day, especially from upgrading from DVDs, which I think could only hold like 8 gigs.
10 maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So this screams to me, it's like, we need a new disc. Sony, get on it. You designed all the discs before, design another one. So
maybe it's time for Xbox to make to return with their HD DVDs. Do you remember those?
I do remember those. They ain't doing it.
They ain't doing nothing.
They got Sony branded Blu-ray players in their Xboxes. So
do you want to know an interesting fact as to why Blu-ray won and HD DVD did not?
I didn't know I was watching Tropic Thunder, but
yeah,
please, that's... please go on.
the adult film industry.
Yep.
Got behind Blu-ray, and that's. I guess that's where most DVD or disc sales happen nowadays.
Yeah, and I guess the I guess that industry is now all digital, so like we don't need to make a new disc. But
no new discs.
Yeah, I think
If you take out the S, they're working on that technology, new versions of Blu-ray discs without the S.
I didn't get it.
Take the S out of disc. Take the S out of.
Okay. I got
goodbye.
Sorry. Just went right over. I'm melting. My head.
It's not a good joke. It's a bad joke, Paul.
It's okay. It's Tuesday. It's all right. No, nobody has to be funny on Tuesday.
Thank God.
All right, so I don't know. It's releasing a game on four discs is a bit ridiculous, but at the same time, I can remember a time where I bought games on four discs. Mm-hmm. They were CDs, but they were on four discs. Like Dune came out this week. Dune Part 2 came out this week. One of the oldest RTSs I can remember playing is Emperor Battle for Dune, and that game had an install disc. And then it had three different discs, depending on what faction you were playing as. Whoa. And so whatever faction you were playing as, you had to put that disc into your computer.
That's really cool.
Like, it's happened before, people. It's a little silly it's happening in 2024, but, you know, you can get through it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right. Last bit of the news before we delve into our main Final Fantasy topic is Payday 3 going to be updating, has been getting a lot of quality of life updates, but now they're at the point where they are actually adding elements to the game. Most notably, they're adding a new solo mode for the game. Which is probably because there's not a lot of people online. So, which is what happens.
So sad.
I really enjoyed Payday 2. From everything I've seen of Payday 3, it just didn't live up to what I wanted it to be. I was on board for Payday 1. Payday 1 was a classic, but I just feel like the game hasn't really grown. So I'm excited that they're continuing to support the game. I think it's a game that, you know, really depends. Like, what's the game that we play together, Phil? Is very popular. I can't remember it right now.
The space game.
Yeah, spooky game.
Lethal Company.
Lethal Company. So like Lethal Company or Void Crew or the pirate game on Xbox, Sea of Thieves. Those are all games that are really fun, but they're very dependent on people having a group of friends to play it with. Yeah. And when you don't have that, you know, it creates a problem. And with Payday 3 having such a rough launch, I feel like people weren't able to like convince their friends to get it. So people didn't buy it. Any interest now that the game is getting a solo mode, Phil?
No, not for, give me like 2 years that I might get Payday 3 when everybody has stopped playing Payday 2 and moved over.
Yeah.
I think there's something interesting. Like Payday 2 was such a supported game for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And Payday 3 just didn't seem like that much of a new iteration for a game that's gotten so much content, you know?
Yeah.
Story games, I totally get, like God of War 1, God of War 2, or God of War Ragnarok. Those are, like, the story is happening, and that's what you want to see. There's not a lot of new gameplay stuff. There's some, but there's not a lot. When it's a game that is mostly focused on gameplay and getting, like, your party and everything together, you need more gameplay iteration than what Payday 3 seemed to have from Payday 2. And that's just from a 1,000-yard view. Helldivers is a great example of a game that completely iterated and changed something from Helldivers 1 to Helldivers 2. And I think that's sort of the norm. If your game is more gameplay focused, you got to like change it in a big way.
I agree.
But yeah.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree. Payday 3, I hope you continue to push on, get better. But I'm probably going to be picking you up on a summer Steam sale at some point.
Yep.
That's probably the most likely time I'm going to buy that. So,
yeah. So yeah. Keep robbing banks, you guys.
Keep robbing banks. All right, let's get into our main topic this week. So, huge release last week on leap year of all days, which is kind of special, I guess. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth came out. We mentioned it in one of the games that came out in our last pod. But now people have gotten a chance to play it, that, you know, people who aren't in the media, obviously. And so players have gotten their hands on it, still getting very highly reviewed. I've watched a lot of content on it. I downloaded the demo. I have not played it yet. But Phil, you mentioned at the beginning of this episode that you got your hands on it, have had some time with it. What are your initial impressions?
You know, it's real good. It's very, very good. There is a big... got my seal of approval. It's a big game for sure, and I'm realizing that I kind of am scratching the surface, and I'm doing the thing in open world games that I both enjoy and kind of dislike, but also recognize it's because they built a good open world, is I'm just going around and doing things that are not the main story because they are interesting leads to follow. I found a series of quests where you find some characters from the first game that are kind of like antagonists. And they're very goofy and very funny. And I just followed them around the map for a solid, like, 3 hours of gameplay of just, like, finding them, beating them. And I will say the combat in that game, for being, like, a turn-based RPG that is turned into an action game, is surprisingly challenging. Like, I'm constantly having to switch between characters and change up my tactics. And, like, okay, what is this person weak to? Let me hit them with this to debuff them and stagger them. So there's a lot going on in the game, but I haven't felt the pull for it like I do for most games. And maybe that's because I'm not so attached to the Final Fantasy legacy. So that is my review.
What do you mean the pull?
Like, I haven't shirked a bunch of responsibilities or, like, made every moment that I could. Like, well, you know what? I can sneak in half an hour right now and, like, play.
Yes. When you're lying in bed and you're thinking about the game, I'm not hell diving right now.
I mean, yeah, the Terminants, man, what are they doing right now? and it's different because it's like a big massive RPG, so it's a different type of game. Mm-hmm. But I think there are a couple things that, like, drag it down for me, and it just, like, slightly makes it not exactly my type of game, but I am going to finish it. Like, I feel the need to, like, want to see what happens to these characters. They do a really good job of fleshing them out. So,
okay.
What's your history with Final Fantasy and, like, Final Fantasy VII in particular?
I have a very close friend who very into Final Fantasy VII, particularly. He grew up with it. Obviously, probably the best Final Fantasy game. And so I'm familiar with it, and I've played a bunch of random Final Fantasy games. I remember when I was a teenager, like, I had a PSP and I played a bunch of Final Fantasy games that came out for that. But I never really understood at all what was going on at any point in time. Like I just didn't get the story. I didn't know what I knew some of the characters' names and some of their relationships, and so I focused on that. But the overarching story of Final Fantasy is lost upon me. And I think even the most hardcore Final Fantasy fans, even though they understand Final Fantasies and all of the different stories in Final Fantasy, they would themselves acknowledge that it's confusing as hell. And that's just how those games are. I was hopeful because for the first part of this game, for Final Fantasy VII Part One, it looked like a true remake of a game as opposed to just another remaster. And a full remake of something, I can support that, where they fully fleshed out, like, areas of the game that they were obviously restricted to because of technical limitations at the time and stuff like that. So I'm, you know, looking at the remake and now Rebirth, I think that, like, visually they're stunning. I think all of the new Final Fantasy games have been absolutely stunning. But for me, and this is, you know, part of us coming from the entertainment industry, I'll speak for myself, I should say, but, like, part of me coming from the entertainment industry, I can't get over the melodrama that's in all of the scenes. Mm-hmm. And again, I think even a really, you know, like, hardcore Final Fantasy fan has to acknowledge it's very melodramatic. And that's not to say that it's bad, but it is a style, and it's not a style that I like. So, that being said, I think, similarly, when you're playing Final Fantasy, I think it really gives players the sensation of, like, being in an anime and, like, fighting battles in an anime. Kind of not quite. I think, like, Elden Ring, I think, kind of does that a little bit, but not, it's not quite anime. And I feel like Final Fantasy is, it's kind of like, I talk about how, Zelda, and that style of game is kind of like playing a Studio Ghibli movie, something like that, a Miyazaki film. And so I think, like, my girlfriend is, she's very into Studio Ghibli. She's very into Zelda. And I was like, I totally see the connection there. And, you know, you brought up weebs. It's like, I see the connection between people who watch anime all the time and people who are into Final Fantasy, because there's a similar vibe going on and you're getting to interact with it. So that's my point of view.
I agree with you. It's, you know, when you played Monster Hunter, that kind of has a little bit of anime vibes, but it's mostly when the palicos are cooking your food.
Yep.
And then you go out and you're, like, doing this gritty fight. Granted, you're doing some cool, like, anime fighting stuff, but you're doing a gritty fight with a beast.
Right.
I feel like Final Fantasy is a lot like the palico scene, just over everything. Like, there is a sequence where you go to get a chocobo, which is, like, the cool yellow bird you ride on. And again, I think very visually stimulating and, like, entertaining.
Very
But the chocobo handles like a tank, sort of. And the character, this is just a real personal pet peeve, but the characters just kind of handle really clumsily when they're out in the world. There's a very specific timing for there's a very specific timing to dodging in the fights that feels, like, unnatural, and you really have to, like, it feels like it is more turn-based than it's willing to let you see, because it looks very, like, high action or whatever, but you really do have to, like, okay, I can get two hits and then I have to dodge. There's absolutely no wiggle room, because once it starts its animation, if I'm in a certain range, I just get hit.
Like, because I know that they've transitioned, and this is not the first game that they've done this in, but they've transitioned between, you know, the turn-based RPG to trying to do, like, this kind of hybrid. Like, and I think when they first did it, like, I think the gaming community in general responded positively, because they're like, this is a good step forward. Do you think that it's still in a place where you feel like the combat is satisfying with this kind of hybrid combat?
Yeah, it is all very challenging and very strategic, I will say. I've taken a few fights that were, like, out of where my character should have been, but there was a lot of times where I was, like, using every last healing potion I had and, like, doing everything that I could to, like, pull out a win on this fight. And then once I figured out, like, the key, I was like, oh, okay, this is a lot easier than I thought. But it really does challenge you to figure out, like, exactly how to take something down.
Sure. Okay.
So, yeah, it's challenging, or it's very, it's not visceral, but it is very gratifying in a way that you don't commonly experience anymore.
Right on. Yeah, like, I was watching it, and it kind of reminded me of the Guardians of the Galaxy game. And, like, that's, you know, like, Guardians of the Galaxy stole stuff from Final Fantasy. I'm not saying it's the other way around. But, like, it kind of reminded me of that, of, like, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy game is a little bit more focused on combat, but it had a lot to do with, you know, ordering your allies to do things. And so, and I really enjoyed the combat in that game, although it kind of starts a little basic and slow. But it gets really, I really like that game. I gotta say, it's a great game.
That was truly a wonderful game. Yeah. Like,
for totally a overlooked player, like, and overshadowed. Like,
yeah. If Suicide Squad had been as good as Guardians of the Galaxy, we'd be having like a whole, we'd be in a whole different place right now. Just because I feel like Square Enix and Marvel kind of like let Guardians of the Galaxy slide out and didn't really do much with it.
Yeah.
They should have put a little bit more into that game. And I feel like a Fantastic Four game would be great by that studio. But anyway,
yeah. Less about that. Also, it's like, you know what? You can make a good game, not do games as a service, and just leave it be. Like,
yeah.
That's fine too. I had a great time at that game. Very, very well done. So, all right. So we're going to continue to talk about Final Fantasy a little bit, but moving off of specifically Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, you know, something we talk a lot about on this podcast is just how we get sick of seeing the same thing over and over and over again. Like, I've complained about Halo a lot, how they've, you know, kind of, they push out the same game over and over again, and they expect it to be a banger over and over again, and they're not coming up with any new ideas. But at the same time, you have franchises like Final Fantasy that have been around forever, and obviously it's a little bit different, because not all the universes aren't connected necessarily, because they're all their own, you know, story. Why do you think Final Fantasy has lasted so long? Why hasn't it been some sort of franchise or just brand that has just died out? Why do you think they're still around today as they were in the 90s?
I'm kind of new to the Final Fantasy tube myself. Like, I think I started playing on PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. But what I can say is their characters are very strong. I think from every game in the mainline series, there is someone that you can point to and be like, I remember this guy's name, I remember this person's name. Like, a Final Fantasy VII specifically just has so many characters that are, like, memorable, and I think for a lot of people there's a lot of nostalgia mixed up in it, but it's not, like, it's not cheap nostalgia. It is, like, these characters have been fleshed out for so many years since the original game came out, and I think that is a big part of it. The Final Fantasy games, for the most part, also don't, like, you won't see Cloud in 7 and then 8.
Right.
They're all in, like, their own little multiverses, and they're all fairy tales kind of being told to somebody. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think that the character work across the games is really what brings people back to them. Like, the stories, while convoluted and crazy, kind of touch something in all of us. It's like, oh, I care about Aerith. I care about Cloud, I care about Noctis. Like, there's some, yeah. And so, I think, like, characters. You said earlier, the characters, and I think you said, like, the living in an anime is a part of it for sure.
Right.
16 did something interesting where they kind of, like, turned their, they wanted to go more Game of Thronesy with it. And I feel like they accomplished that to an extent. But tough to say. But I think it's characters, because memorable villains also in each of them. Sephiroth being, like, almost world famous. He's in Smash Brothers.
Yeah. Well, I guess, like, it could be like a cultural thing too. Like, you see a bunch of games that come out of like Japan, and it's like we just got another Tekken, we just got another Street Fighter. These are games now, you know. That being said, you know, we just got Mortal Kombat 12, there are games that have franchises and brands that have stood the test of time. And I will say, with Final Fantasy, like, they have a great formula, because, like you said, all of the stories are separated. They're not connected. They're not building on each other. They're not using the same characters over and over again. I would argue that their heroes tend to be very similar throughout the Final Fantasy universes. They seem to be different versions of the similar character. I'll say that. I think they've kind of masked, they have this perfect, like, branding situation where it's like I feel like in gaming and in movies and TV and entertainment right now, studios, they do not want to make a new thing because they're so afraid that they make a new thing, it's not going to succeed on the market because nobody knows what the heck it is. And so that's why we're getting the Dune remake. That's why we have a Lord of the Rings Amazon show, is because they have to, they are only committed to known quantities. And with Final Fantasy, it's like you can put Final Fantasy on the title of a thing. You know generally what it is, but you can do your own complete story that is not held back by what happened before or expectations or anything like that. And so it's kind of like business-wise, it's really ideal, I think.
Yeah.
Where they can just stick Final Fantasy on there, new game, you know, and it's, we're not doing this. It's not Halo Infinite where we're continuing the story sort of, you know? So I have to give them a lot of credit for that. A lot of credit.
I mean, that point is very well realized when you look at Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, the film that came out in 2001, that has seemingly nothing to do with anything else related to Final Fantasy. I think there's also something interesting about Final Fantasy VII in particular that has been like, they've released Crisis Core, Advent Children, a lot of like PSP games that were all tied in that universe. And I kind of wonder what it is that really stuck with people in that, that made people so connected to that franchise that they keep revisiting this well in particular.
I don't know. I think it's the anime thing. I don't know. Mm. We need, all right, for any weebs out there, we need you to come on and you got to explain this to us. All right. Cause,
Yeah. I have a friend who's in love with Final Fantasy, and I really need to, I'm going to have a little interview with him and see what we can get out of him.
Yeah. Do like a, but, we'll do a side, a little side interview. That would be great. Cause I need to be told, someone educate me because
well, there's Tifa Lockhart in a bikini that has gotten most men on the internet engaged in the game. So,
yes.
So weebs again, it's weebs. It's just
well, for everybody out there who enjoys Final Fantasy, I'm glad that you got this game. I'm glad that it's getting good reviews and that most people seem to be enjoying it. But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for us for this week, Phil. We are running out of time here quickly. So any more little gaming tidbits, any more, crumblies at the bottom of the bag?
The game, The Thaumaturge, arrived. It's a little indie.
Thaumaturge.
Yeah. It's an indie Metroidvania and it looks like a, hallucinogenic trip.
Oh yes. Okay.
Yeah. It's, I feel like it's been popular among some YouTubers that I like to like that recommend obscure games. That was something that I forgot to add earlier, but if you like Metroidvanias and really like alternate twists on them, it's probably something you want to check out. It's gotten kind of like middle of the road reviews. I think it's at a 72% average, but yeah, if you are a Metroidvania person like I am, I would say give it a squeeze.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, yeah, Metroid, huge fan base right there. So, okay. Well, we are going to wrap it up for this week. Thank you for joining us.
I said the wrong title. I'm so sorry. It's called Ultros. I was looking at the wrong review thread.
Okay.
Ultros. Ultros.
All right. Okay. Well, did that just come up?
Yes.
All right. Well, when we post this pod, I will put it in the description. For anybody looking to check out that game. But yes, as I was saying, we are out for this week. If you enjoyed our podcast, first of all, thank you for listening to the entire thing and hearing my voice right now at the end of this episode. So please give us a like and subscribe. Still trying to get to 300 subscribers over on YouTube. So give us a subscribe over there. And yeah, hope you have a great gaming week and weekend. And we will be back next week.
Peace.
Peace.